Greetings. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we're building bridges.
Our guests on the ground in Palestine, Israel, to discuss what's happening on the ground and for us to stand with the people of Palestine as they resist over 75 years of brutal and illegal occupation by the Israelis. But first,
try to imagine yourself living in these tents, not for a day, not for a week, not for a month, not for a year. Suppose you imagine yourself that all your life you are going to stay in this tent. Believe me, you will make a gorilla. You will go and fight. Fight for your land. Fight for your home. Fight for your country.
Assert that the resistance of an occupied people is both inevitable and justified morally, politically, and under tenets of international law. I am extremely pleased, indeed honored, to have Mazin Kwezia. I hope I have pronounced his last name correctly. Maybe you can.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. And I want to say before I tell you a little bit more about Mazin that we had tried very, very hard and may still be joined directly from Gaza with Moshe Al-Farah, who is a political activist and author, a filmmaker, who is on the ground from Khan Yunis in the Gaza Strip, and the lack of electricity as they try to starve the people of Gaza, which is reminiscent to me. Yes, it's reminiscent of the Warsaw Ghetto. There's no question about it. So we hope that Moshe is able to get some electricity, able to be with us and relate most consistently and demonstratively what is happening on the ground in Gaza, which has generally been blanked out of all of the media here in terms of its seriousness. But Mazin, let's begin. You are a professor at Bethlehem University. One of your books, which I had read, was Sharing the Land of Canaan. And you recently worked on a piece that I thought was extremely important called Aqsa Flood. So why don't you begin by telling us about your essential premise in that tenet, or your description, your understanding of the rights of an oppressed people to fight for their self-determination, to fight for their land, and indeed the very existence of their nation.
I am it's very hard to articulate. In the past few hours, I've been watching videos and pictures of children being pulled from under the rubble in Gaza with carpet bombing that Israel has done in Gaza. When you mention the Warsaw Ghetto, it is a tiny, minuscule issue compared to what Israel is doing. Nazis did not flatten the Warsaw Ghetto on top of its people. They did not deny water to the remaining people in the Warsaw Ghetto. Actually, what Israel is doing is so horrific. I am really caught for thinking of the right words to describe it. You're talking about 2.3 million Palestinians. The Warsaw Ghetto was a few tens of thousands. 2.3 million Palestinians, most of them are refugees. Most of them have been through ethnic cleansing more than once. Their homes have been demolished more than once. They've been kicked out of their homes more than once. They have lost relatives more than once. There is not a single family in Gaza that remains with some relatives that have not seen killing of their children or parents or mothers and fathers and relatives, etc. I'm not talking about the families that were obliterated en masse. For example, one family, 18 members were wiped out because Israel bombed the residential building on top of them. 18 members of the same family. That family is no longer in the record book, and they will not have grandchildren or anything. Anybody carrying their last name, Shaib family. It's horrific. You know what's happening under the gaze of the whole world is horrific. And for this Zionist Blinken, who is Secretary of State, to come here and say, I come here as a Jew. I support Israel defending itself. What is defending yourself for 75 years, obliterating your whole nation? 15 million Palestinians in the world, 8.5 million of us are refugees or displaced people, and the rest live in those ghettos like the Gaza Strip. Or here in Bethlehem, I live in a ghetto in a concentration area, which is locked, by the way, as I speak to you. The gates to Bethlehem are locked where Jesus was born. As a Palestinian Christian, I can tell you, Christians in this country have lived since, of course, we converted to Christianity some 2,000 years ago, have lived in this country, have never seen in the past 2,000 years a more cruel colonizer or occupiers. And we passed through dozens of them, from the Romans to the Persians to the Egyptians to the British to many others. We have never seen a more cruel, inhumane occupier colonizer in the state of Palestine, in the country of Palestine. So as I said, it's very hard to even begin to describe what's going on. Well, and for them to say, when people resist, that this is terrorism, I actually understand it. The European colonizers in North America, that's why, by the way, the U.S. supports Israel, the European colonizers in North America and the United States, when they ethnically cleansed and murdered so many Native Americans, they said, we're only defending ourselves, and we have a right to defend ourselves against those savages that are attacking us, and we are only circling the wagons to protect ourselves. It's an understandable logic of colonizers, not excusable. I'm saying it's understandable as part of colonization. It is sick in many ways also.
Mazine, are you able to work now? Is Bethlehem University functioning? If it is, or if it isn't, what are the general sentiments of the students and so on there?
No, the university is closed, of course, and many other universities are closed, and schools are closed. So there is a general paralysis of life in the West Bank. But I must reiterate again and keep the focus on Gaza, because at least our universities and our schools still stand. I have to remind your listeners that Gaza universities have been bombed, Gaza schools have been bombed, Gaza hospitals have been bombed. Israel is even targeting ambulances trying to evacuate injured people from under the rubble of their homes. And the Gaza medical system is already shutting down because there's no medicines or bandages or things like that left in Gaza, because Israel shut down Gaza, basically. It is a genocide in every sense of the word that is happening in Gaza. And I find it remarkable that the so-called West, civilized world, democratic world, as I always claim that they are democratic, that they not only allow this to happen, they actually fund it and support it with more weapons for Israel, including white phosphorus and other banned weapons that Israel is using in Gaza.
And I do want to remind our listeners that even humanitarian activists such as Moshe Al-Fara have not been able to get through because they are being totally cordoned off. There is no electricity, along with the fact there's no foodstuffs, there's no waters. What was already described as the largest open-air prison in the world, Gaza, which is totally cordoned off now, is being blockaded with any medical supply, foodstuffs, water, electricity, and so on. So we wish Moshe well and are terribly, terribly pained that he was not able to get through to evoke and awaken and provide us with the real information to evoke people's empathy and then pressure on the U.S. And we're going to talk more about the issues of the U.S. and indeed countries like Egypt as we continue our discussion with Marzin. Right now, and I want to get back to this, two-thirds of Gaza's 2.2 million people are refugees. And I think we have to lift that up and understand why that's the case and that this isn't an immediate or just happened, or this isn't a happenstance, the kind of violence against the general populace by virtue of Hamas's activity for against the occupation. This is, some people would suggest, a violence that was provoked and wanted by the Netanyahu regime as almost really a final solution of the erasure of the people of Palestine. Am I being too dramatic? Am I being your thoughts on that? And help us understand really how Gaza came to be and why two-thirds of its population are refugees.
I mean, Netanyahu was at the United Nations just a few weeks ago when he showed the map of the country, our country, which is Palestine, and he says, this is Israel, and there's nothing of mention of Palestine. And then he showed another map where he shows, this is Israel 1948, and now this is Israel today, which is what he showed is a map of the whole Middle East, where it includes even Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, etc., telling the world that this is the level of hegemony that Israel has exerted. And he says, you know, the local people must acknowledge that this is reality and that they can do nothing. Another Israeli general once said, once we have settled the land, all the native people will be able to do is run around like drugged cockroaches in a bottle. Well, Gaza, I guess you can say people of Gaza, 2.3 million people, are drugged cockroaches in a bottle. But some of these cockroaches seem to have escaped of the bottle and made some difficulties for the Israelis in the recent skirmish. I think the situation, as you described it, is accurate. It may be even worse in some sense, because, as I said, Israel, unlike previous colonizing powers like France in Algeria or the Dutch and the British in South Africa, they do have a lot of influence around the West, in Western media, mainstream media, as if you watch CNN, Fox News, etc., BBC even, you will find the same regurgitation of Zionist talking points, how they are defending themselves against those terrorists, etc. So Israel has so much influence globally, in the West especially, maybe not in China or Russia or the developing countries, but certainly in the West, in Europe, in North America, and in Australia, which is part of the West, as it is also another colonizing entity that did genocide of its native people, the Aborigines. That's why Australia supports Israel. This is where there is a difference with previous colonial powers. The other difference is that it is happening in the 21st century. Now, this may have some ramifications, positive or negative, and that relates to, you know, the internet. Now, it's very hard, the reality on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, TikToks, people are showing videos of the horrendous destruction and genocide in Gaza. But to go back to your question about refugees, I mean, why is Gaza have two-thirds of its population as refugees? An area that's semi-arid area of a few square miles on the Mediterranean coast. It's very simple. Just like in South Africa, the apartheid regime that we face here did even worse than South Africa because it removed most of the population. The remaining population was cooped up in these Bantustans or ghettos, whether they are refugees or people who belong from the ghettos, sort of like the Soweto ghetto in South Africa or what Germany did with Jews in concentration camps. So they put us in concentration camps. Those of us who remain, of course, there are Palestinians in Lebanon, in Syria, in Jordan, etc. More than half the Palestinian population is outside the country. But within the country, like Gaza, is a ghetto with two-thirds of its population, refugees or displaced people. And now Israel is not even happy with this arrangement. So they want to drive that population to Egypt, to the Sinai Desert. Egypt is refusing, of course, this arrangement. They cannot handle 2.3 million additional refugees. They already have Sudanese and Palestinian refugees from before. This is what is happening. You know, it's really very hard to even articulate to people who don't know the history. But I guess it is just, you know, if you know the history of Native Americans and what happened with the March of Tears and putting Indians, leftover so-called American Indians, in reservations and moving them from Florida to Oklahoma and so forth, it is important. Hmm. But the other thing that is of interest to note, when they say Hamas in Gaza attacked Israel, the people of Gaza that support Hamas went and attacked Israel. Sorry, they didn't attack Israel. They went into areas that they actually came from. These are Ashkelon, for example, Sderot. Sderot used to be a Palestinian village called Najd that was ethnically cleansed in 1948. And the people who went to so-called Sderot are actually people from Najd or from Ashkelon who went back to their original areas that they were kicked out of, ethnically cleansed from.
And we are speaking with Mazen Kwesiya, who is a professor at Bethlehem University. His most recent book was Sharing the Land of Canaan. And I do want to lift up, and I should say that he's also the director of the Palestinian Institute of Biodiversity and Sustainability. So this is a man of life. This is a man of sustainability. And I'm glad that you raised the idea that, if anything, what was happening, and maybe this even diminishes how serious it was, but what was happening was a jailbreak, a breaking out of the concentration camp, the area that people have been herded into as they've been divested, pushed off their land, oftentimes killed for their land. And certainly we have to recognize, we must recognize that whether it was Shabra Satilia massacre of, I believe, 60 years ago now, that this is not the first massacre that has occurred, and yet it has been largely ignored by certainly the Western nations. But I do want to turn before, again, to remind people what is happening now in Gaza, because we must evoke the sympathy and educate, agitate, and organize the world community to support the people of Gaza, to support the Palestinian people for a free, free Palestine. Make the case for us, sir.
When you mentioned the massacres, my mother, who died in April, she was 91 years old. Even on her deathbed, she was remembering her friend who was killed in the massacre of Deir Yassin. one of the key massacres, one of 33 massacres committed in the early part of 1948 to drive Palestinians out of the country. Her friend and she were both 18 years old at the time, going to the same teacher's college in Jerusalem. And her friend's name is Hayab al-Bisi. So these, as you point out, these massacres have been going on for decades. This is one of the longest military occupation colonial systems going on. I mean, Morocco is colonizing Western Sahara as we speak, but that's fairly recent colonization, started about 20 years ago. Here we are talking about decades, you know, almost 100 years, because it was started under the British rule of Palestine to fulfill the Balfour Declaration. So when we talk about what Palestinians' reaction to this, the reaction would not be different if it were not Palestinians and Israeli Jews or Jews from Europe who came and did this. It's the same kind of reaction that happened in South Africa under apartheid, Native Americans under European colonization, Aborigines in Australia, Algerians under French colonization, the Aztecs under Spaniard colonization. It is the same kinds of reactions. What are these reactions? Now, you mentioned one of my books, Sharing the Land of Canaan. I wrote a book subsequent to that called Popular Resistance in Palestine, A History of Hope and Empowerment, in which I explain this history of 100 years of resistance, a resistance that kept the hope alive. And without that resistance, I would not be here speaking to you from Bethlehem. I would be either dead or never born, or I would be in a refugee camp in Syria or Lebanon or Jordan. The fact that Palestinians stuck to their land is similar to the kind of resistance that South Africans did. It involves hundreds of forms of resistance, depending on who you talk to and what's the background of these people that engage in resistance. I, as a professor at the university, I engaged in popular resistance, nonviolent resistance. I was even arrested and detained many times for this nonviolent resistance. There's Hamas people who believe in armed resistance, although also many of them think that nonviolent resistance is a legitimate tool. But anyway, regardless of the differences, I mean, in South Africa, there were differences. There were people like Desmond Tutu who believed in nonviolent resistance or popular resistance. And there were people like Nelson Mandela who believed in armed resistance, a la what Hamas is doing now. Different ideas about resistance that the local people believe in and engage in. And I'm just describing it as a scientist, not as wishful thinking of what people should or should not do. As a scientist, as an observer of nature, as a biologist, I say that's what it is. You have people engaging in resistance because there's oppression. Once oppression ends, resistance ends. This is so logical. For the life of me, I do not understand why some in the West, I'm not talking about Biden and the Zionists and the others, who are doing it because they are profiting financially. I'm talking about some in the West who mistakenly buy the propaganda, the Zionist propaganda, that you know, this resistance is somehow illegitimate. No, I think they can look at history and understand what happens. And no matter whether they like a particular tactic or resistance or don't like it, they have to understand what's underlying this, what's the context, what's the etiology, as we say in the medical field. If you have an etiology like cancer, for example, you have symptoms like skin rash and headache and anemia, you cannot say, well, forget the underlying symptom. Let's talk about the underlying etiology. Let's talk about the symptoms and treating the symptoms So take some aspirin for your headache, some cream for your skin, go home, and God willing, everything will be okay. No, the skin rash will come back, and the headache will come back. And unless you treat the underlying etiology, you're not going to be treating and the symptoms.
Professor, likewise, unfortunately, we have about 30 seconds left. We'll certainly have you back. We'll continue to follow this issue and the responsibility of people of conscience to really fight for the cessation of hostilities. But for a just peace, and that means for a free, free Palestine, and to understand the responsibility of us here to stop the military expenditures and other support by the U.S. government of Palestine. So, 30 seconds left, sir.
I mean, Jewish Voice for Peace has called on Americans to call their representatives to stop fueling violence, to stop funding violence, to stop sending Israel weapons and resources to kill civilians. And I urge the public to get engaged. As Howard Zinn said, you can't be neutral in a moving train. Our tax money, American tax money, are paying for this.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. And finally, I say Palestinians and all people of conscience are with your people in Gaza as they face the wrath of the racist apartheid regime, and may the recent events dubbed by you in your important article, Al-Aqsa Flood, result in a flood of truth and justice and humanity long overdue in Palestine. This is the only way to end the violence, colonizers, and resistance. And do try to get a copy of Popular Resistance in Palestine, A History of Hope and Empowerment by our guest, who we please stay safe. We will continue to have your wisdom with us. Again, we've been speaking with Professor Mazin Kwezeya, who is an author and the director of the Palestinian Institute of Biodiversity and Sustainability, and who must stay safe in Bethlehem to continue to struggle. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we are building bridges to you. So educate, agitate, organize to empower we the people, and in this instance, for Medicare for all, and against nuclear warfare, use of nuclear weapons, and against war. Thanks for listening.